Today is September the 11th, 2024, a day of tribute and remembrance. Welcome to the award-winning Personal Computer Show. I'm Hank Key. Big Tech has been collecting and aggregating your personal data. Do you know how Big Tech companies and our government are using your personal data? We have been bringing computer news, hardware and software reviews, guest interviews, and news of user group meetings for the past 40-plus years. The Personal Computer Show is a 3-time winner of the prestigious National Computer Press Awards. Our only advocacies are consumerism and the First Amendment. I welcome you, the listeners, to provide feedback as to what you want to hear. Address your suggestions to Hank at pcradioshow.org. Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.live. That's PRN.live, streaming on the Internet. Podcasts of the program is available on PRN.live on the Internet. You can leave us a message with your questions or comment at hank@pcradioshow.org. The events of September the 11th, 2001, marked a profound tragedy in American history, resulting in the loss of 2,977 lives and leaving a lasting impact on the nation and the world. Each year, the anniversary of 9/11 serves as a day of remembrance, reflection, and tribute to those who lost their lives, as well as to the heroes who responded to the crisis. On the anniversary, various commemorative events are held across the country, particularly at the National September 11th Memorial and Museum in New York City, the Pentagon, and the Flight 93 National Memorial in Pennsylvania. These events honor the victims and recognize the bravery of first responders and recovery workers. In addition to formal memorials, communities engage in service activities throughout September. The 9/11 National Day of Service and Remembrance encourages individuals to participate in volunteer efforts such as food drives and neighborhood cleanups, fostering a spirit of unity and kindness. This initiative not only honors the memory of the victims, but also emphasizes the importance of community service and support for first responders and military families. The legacy of 9/11 continues to resonate, prompting discussions about patriotism, security, and the importance of community. Memorials and educational programs aim to ensure that future generations understand the events and their implications. On this 23rd anniversary, the collective memory of 9/11 remains a powerful reminder of resilience, unity, and the enduring spirit of those affected by the tragedy. The Federal Trade Commission called on to stop tech makers downgrading specs after purchase. The FTC was urged to stop tech makers downgrading devices after you bought them. Some companies drop app features or brick devices they rather not support or add post-sale subscriptions. Consumer and digital rights activists are calling on the U.S. Federal Trade Commission to stop device makers using software to reduce product functionality or adding surprise fees post-purchase. In an 8-page letter to the commission, the activists mentioned the Google Levi's collaboration on Denim jacket that contains sensors enabling it to control an Android device through a special app. When the app was discontinued in 2023, the jacket lost that functionality. The letter also mentions the car thing, an automotive infotainment device created by Spotify, which bricked the device fewer than 2 years after launch and did not offer a refund. Another example highlighted is the $1,695 Snoo, that's S-N-O-O, connected bassinet manufactured by an outfit named Happiest Baby. Kids outgrow bassinets, yet Happiest Baby this year notify customers that if they ever sold or gave away their bassinets, the device's next owner would have to pay a new $20 monthly subscription fee to keep certain features. Activists argue that reduces the resale value of the devices. Signatories to the letter include individuals from Consumer Reports, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, Teardown Artists, iFixit, and the Software Freedom Conservancy. Environmental groups and computer repair shops also signed the letter. The signatories urge the FTC to create clear guidance that would prevent device manufacturers from using software that locks out features and functions in products that are already owned by customers. The practice of using software to block features and functions is referred to by the signatories as software tethering. Consumers need a clear standard for what to expect when purchasing a connected device, stated Justin Brookman, Director of Technology Policy at Consumer Reports and a former policy director of the FTC's Office of Technology, Research and Investigation. Too often, consumers are left with devices that stop functioning because companies decide to end support with little to no warning. This leaves people stranded with devices they once relied on, unable to access features or updates. Consumers increasingly face a death by a thousand cuts as connected products they purchase lose their software support or advertised features that may have prompted the original purchase. They may see the device turn into a brick or their favorite features locked behind a subscription. Such software tethers also prevent consumers from reselling their purchases, as some software features may not transfer or manufacturers may shut down devices, causing a second-hand buyer's harm. Brookman believes this is the first such policy request to the Federal Trade Commission that asks the agency to help consumers with this dilemma. It's a relatively new issue with no clear established norms, but it has certainly become an issue that comes up more and more with device makers as they change their rules about product updates and usage. The FTC has done some limited actions on the topic, but not enough to set clear practices for industry to follow. SanDisk releases 4-terabyte micro SD and 8-terabyte SD card. Lately, memory card manufacturers have been trying to cram as much storage onto SD and micro SD cards, and SanDisk is no exception. Samsung, Kioxia, and Micron have all released storage-dense memory cards in the recent years, but SanDisk has them all beat with a new 4-terabyte micro SD and massive 8-terabyte SD. Announced as part of the company's display at the Future of Memory and Storage Conference in Santa Clara, California. Western Digital announced that it would be displaying two new memory card solutions that would be made available under its SanDisk brand. Describing the achievement as groundbreaking, the company introduced the world's first 4-terabyte micro SD card and the world's first 8-terabyte SD card designed to be used with smartphones, gaming devices, drones, cameras, and laptops. Both cards are only UHS-1, meaning SanDisk continue the trend of sacrificing speed for capacity. SD cards, and especially micro SD cards, have limited physical space to work with, meaning no manufacturer has been successfully able to combine high capacity with high speed. There simply isn't enough room for the second line of contacts required for the faster UHS-2 performance. Development of SD Express has also rightfully stalled due to the number of issues with the format. So manufacturers like Western Digital have simply chosen to iterate on existing designs and impress with high storage capacity numbers while downplaying any sacrifices to speed. Speaking of speed, Western Digital doesn't note any other information on these cards, including their V rating. SanDisk's current 1-terabyte card offering that feature UHS-1 technology cap out at the promise of 30 megabytes per second minimum transfer speeds, which means that while they might spike as high as 200 megabytes per second, they don't maintain it. SanDisk 1.5-terabyte micro SD card is even worse off, only promising to maintain 10 megabytes per second with its low V10 rating. Since SanDisk says its cards are designed to be used in drones and cameras, the hope is that they would hit at least V30, although for many cameras, even that simply won't be fast enough to unlock long bursts of photos, even at lower 24 megapixel resolutions or high frame rate or high bit rate 4K video. Still, cramming 8 TB onto an SD card and 4 TB onto a microSD card is remarkable. Western Digital didn't stop there either and is also demonstrating first ever 16 TB portable SSD as a proof of concept called the SanDisk Desk Drive, which it says has unprecedented space and performance to keep up with the ever-growing creation and consumption of rich and engaging content. In a Wallet Hub iPhone survey, 63% of Americans won't buy a phone this year due to inflation. This year, consumers are holding off on upgrading their phones, as 63% of people say they won't buy a new phone due to inflation, when day-to-day living costs are already high. It's hard for many people to justify an expensive phone upgrade. In fact, 9 in 10 Americans think iPhones are overpriced, so Apple and other phone companies may need to consider lowering prices or offering more substantial features, differences between models to entice customers. When buying a new phone, start by identifying the features that are most important to you and which ones you can do without. By narrowing down your options to phones that excel in the features you care about and ruthlessly eliminating those with extras you do not need, you can save money. The monthly cost for phone service can add up quickly, so it is worth shopping around and doing the math of buying a phone separate from the carrier. Look into different carriers, including virtual carriers like Telo, Mint Mobile, Visible, or Google Fi, which often have lower costs. While these carriers might not include the latest phones in their plans, their overall lower rates could make your total cost of owning a phone more affordable. If you are upgrading, try to get the best price for your old phone. Prices can vary significantly, with some places offering $30 and others up to $150 for the same model. Research different trade-in programs or resale options to get the most money back. Finally, ask yourself if you really need a new phone right now. If your current phone still meets your needs, waiting a bit longer could save you money and give you more time to find the perfect deal. If money is a concern, which of course it is always best to wait until you have a new phone coming to you based on your cell phone plan or can find a deal. From a marketing perspective, brands often use price to signal quality. Higher prices can make a product seem more premium. The flagship iPhone is considered a premium product, so it is priced higher than other phones. However, when 9 out of 10 Americans think iPhones are overpriced, it shows that many people believe the price is unfair. Consumers have a sense of what a fair price is, based on the idea that both the buyer and seller should get a fair deal. If a product's price is too high without a good reason, like better features or higher costs, consumers may feel cheated. Reasonable price is highly subjective, and that obviously depends on one's income, net worth, and overall assets, and how much a particular item means to you. Consumers should be careful about getting sucked into a cycle of constantly having to have the newest, latest phone, especially at the highest price points. Maybe waiting a little bit longer will allow them to save more and for prices to come down a bit. More than 2 in 5 Americans think a new iPhone is worth going into debt for. Is it ever worth going into debt for a phone? Debt may be unavoidable, such as for unplanned medical expenses. One really should only take on debt for something that will generally have a positive return on that investment, such as education. presenting the IT Pro Series with Benjamin Rockwell.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, technology, the workplace, how they intertwine, and some of the different side effects that come along with how everything has changed. Now, it's no secret that prior to COVID, we still had technology. We went into the office and we had computers there. We would check our emails. Our computers stayed on the desk, and a lot of the different communication tools that we had around, whether we're talking about Teams or we're talking about Zoom and Slack, that did not exist, at least not a whole lot. In some companies that were a little bit more technologically savvy, we had those tools, but they weren't the end-all be-all. They weren't how we operated. A lot of it was, yes, on emails, and once we ended the day, once we went home, once we ended our shift, we were out of touch with the office, and that was good. Of course, we all know COVID came along, and IT departments scrambled. They worked overtime. They put in all kinds of hours because they needed to put in the effort that was required to make us all available to work, yes, from home. And a lot of us were really excited about that. We managed to gain so much in the life side of our work-life balance. We eliminated our commutes. We eliminated a lot of these different things that set us back with our family. We managed to save money by eating at home. We managed to have lunches with family. And yes, a more timely dinner. And yes, if we had an interruption for just a matter of a minute or two or even five to take care of the kids, that was okay. Now, technology did come along. Technology enabled us to do a lot of different new connections with the office. We could now go forward, and we have, most of us have some form of, usually it's a laptop at home. It usually goes back and forth between the office. If we've returned into the office, we've managed to bring our email onto our personal smartphones from the office. Yes. And then we returned to the office. Now, the interesting thing is we had all of these different technologies come along that enabled us to work via remote. And they're there. They're already in place. They're already set there. And they scream, we've got to have you in the office for collaboration. But now they've done something very interesting for some of the folks that are out there. And I'm starting to see a lot of these different little glimmers and hints that the workplace is trying to recover some of your time away from that life side of the work-life balance. They've decided they want you in the office, but they also want you to bring your work home with you. They want you to start taking your laptop home from the office. Yes, they want you to start checking your emails, your Teams, your whatever it is that you're communicating with. They want you full-time to be checking on everything. And this is an awkward point because, yes, they're asking you to work more hours. They're asking you to put in a far deeper amount of effort into your work than you did prior to COVID. Because, oh yes, technology has enabled it. Because, yes, we also need you to check on this particular thing. We need you to get this project done. We need you to whatever it is. It's really weird. They have all of these different key performance indicators that say that you have to come into the office. Some consultant said, yes, everybody's got to come back into the office. But then you also need to work from home. And that is not really a good thing. And a lot of people are already starting to push back against this. They're starting to fight on this because, yes, our salaries may have changed a little bit. They may not have changed at all. You may be lucky. You may have escaped some of this. I know I actually have. I have been rather blessed along the way, and I put in a good, what we call an IT work day, which means, yes, there are times where we put some time in outside of that time period, and that's always been a known factor in it. And frankly, most IT folks get paid for that kind of response. But I want you to think about this. I want you to consider, how have you had to evolve as time moves forward? Are you having to put in more effort? Are you having to work harder simply because technology has enabled the ability to work not only from the office for a matter of 40 hours a week, but also from home or your vacation or wherever else you might be in the world? How you have to be on call, even though your role is not typically, or at least it wasn't prior to COVID-19, wasn't on call at all. Look, this needs to be a continual check for us. We need to be constantly evaluating, how are we working? How are we living? How is the workplace interacting with everything that we do? This is a discussion that we all should be having with ourselves, with our spouses, with our bosses and our coworkers. Because yes, we are supposed to do a job. We're supposed to do a certain level of work, but we need to make sure that we don't wind up being burned out and we're not working to live, but rather living to work, which gets to be an ugly point. This is Benjamin Rockwell. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin. Recycling your old computers and printers. Instead of throwing away your old laptops, desktops, and printers, you can do your part to ease the burden on our landfill. There are many ways you can responsibly recycle them for free and sometimes even for store credit. In some states, including California, throwing them away is actually illegal and can draw large fines. And disposing of such items can be as simple as bringing them to major retailers such as Best Buy, Office Max, Office Depot, and Staples. According to a new UN report, consumers around the world are throwing away about 5 times more gadgets than are being recycled. Here's what you need to know about recycling your old tech. Wherever you choose to take or mail in your items to be recycled, you'll want to make sure that you protect your data by removing it as best as you can before you do so. One way to do this is to perform a factory reset on your computer. Some retail stores will accept computers and printers for recycling, but it's not always a free service. Policies vary by company. You can recycle your old Apple computers, monitors, and peripherals, such as printers, for free at an Apple store, but there's a costly catch. According to the Apple Free Recycling Program, in order to receive this service, you must also purchase a qualifying Apple computer or monitor. Need another option? A third-party company called Gazelle buys old MacBooks to recycle them. After accepting Gazelle's offer, you print out a prepaid label or request a prepaid box and ship the machine to them. Best Buy generally accepts up to 3 household items per person per day to be recycled for free, and that includes desktop computers and printers, as well as other items ranging from e-readers to vacuum cleaners. While 3 is a limit for most items, there's a higher standard for laptops. Best Buy will take 5 of those per household per day. Note that rules for dropping off monitors vary by state, and it's not always free to do so. Best Buy also offers a mail-in recycling service for select items, but that's also not free. A small box that holds up to 6 pounds costs $23, while a large box up to 15 pounds costs $30. Office Depot and Office Max merged in 2013. The retailers offer a tech trade-in program both in-store and online, where customers may be able to get a store gift card in exchange for their old computers and printers. If the device has no trade-in value, the company will recycle it for free. Office Depot also sells its own tech recycling boxes that you can fill up with electronics to be recycled and then drop off at the store. But they aren't free. The small boxes cost $8.39 and hold up to 20 pounds. The medium ones cost $18.29 and hold up to 40 pounds. And the large box costs $28 and hold up to 60 pounds. You can bring in your old desktop computers, laptops, printers, and more to the Staples checkout counter to be recycled for free, even if they weren't purchased there. The retailer also has a new free at-home battery recycling box, which, according to a rep, has led to customers recycling thousands of batteries per week, up from an earlier average of 50 batteries per week. If you don't live near a major retailer or would rather take your computers and printers to a recycling center, you can locate places close to you by using search tools provided by Earth 911 and the Consumer Technology Association. Use the recycling center search function on Earth 911 to find recycling centers near your zip code that accepts laptops, desktops, and printers. Note that the results may also turn up some places that accept mobile phones and not computers or printers, so you may have to do a little filtering. Consult the Consumer Technology Association's Greener Gadgets Recycle Locator to find local recycling centers in your area that will take old items. Search on the following words, CTA Recycle Locator. The search function also allows you to filter the results to separately hunt for places that take computers versus printers. Do you still need a home landline phone? When a major AT&T outage earlier this year took out mobile networks in many of the most populous cities in the United States, people were stranded without one of their most critical lines of access to the world for more than 12 hours. The outage was a reminder of the perils of relying only on mobile phones, and it may have made some people rethink the place of a home device that used to be standard issue, but is now nearly obsolete, the landline telephone. Landlines may still have a place, but only 28% of American households have one. Landlines are telephone lines that connect to specialized wiring in our homes. Landline phones connect to one another through a global communication network that was built over more than a century. But as cell phones became broadly available and affordable, many people chose to drop their landlines altogether. In a 2022 survey by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, found that only about 29% of U.S. adults live in a house with a landline phone, down from more than 90% back in 2004. The crossover happened around 2015, which was also when smartphone sales entered a boom period that reshaped the tech industry. What makes landlines more reliable? Landline phones operate on a separate infrastructure built from copper phone lines that are inexpensive to build and rather reliable. They also don't have the drawbacks of cellular networks like drop calls, poor or distorted quality, or weak reception. A key reason people keep landlines around is that they tend to work even during power outages, which is a big plus for those whose work involve emergency services, business, or healthcare. The U.S. Federal Communications Commission is phasing out requirements for phone companies to provide landline services VoIP and POTS. VoIP, which is V-O-I-P, is Voice over Internet Protocol, also called IP telephony, and POTS is called Plain Old Telephone Service across the country. As a result, more homes and business offices are being built with Ethernet jacks rather than phone jacks. And not all landlines use copper phone lines. Increasingly, companies are piggybacking their phone systems on their internet connections, a service called Voice over Internet Protocol, or VoIP. If you want to install a landline, call the local phone company and ask about phone services. If you live in an apartment building, it's important for you to find out where the phone junction box is. Typically, the landlord should know, and if not, the local phone company should be able to find it. And there are some follow-up questions you want to ask if you want to hook up a landline, and what to look for in the answers. Are the landlines VoIP or are they POTS? POTS is plain old telephone service. Ideally, if you're looking for security and reliability, POTS is what you want. VoIP can work, but understand that it likely relies on your internet modem and connection to work. If it's VoIP, does the company have backup power systems to ensure the voice line works in a power outage? Most companies do sell backup batteries you can buy directly from them. You can use an uninterrupted power supply. Portable power supplies do allow you to stay electronically powered on the go, but those aren't meant to continuously monitor for power outages and then kick in as needed. Typically, local calls are free, but dialing out of your area code costs. So what's the rate structure? Long-distance calls in particular are usually charged per minute, and the companies don't always publish that information on their website. Make sure you know what it'll cost. What do you do with a landline? Well, if you have a landline, don't leave it idle. There are some ways to make it more useful. Google Voice is a popular option, giving you a new phone number that acts as a sort of a hub. Whenever people call Google Voice, then calls every phone to which you have it connected to, be it a home landline, a cell phone, a work phone, or anything else. There are other such services too, including Zoom and RingCentral. If you don't like working with Google, a landline phone can also connect with home security systems and medical alert sensors to help ensure that if you're in an emergency, help will be there as soon as possible. Are you finding that there's high CPU usage on Windows? It's normal for CPU usage to spike on your Windows computer when you're gaming or running resource-intensive programs. However, if you notice that this happening even during basic tasks like browsing the web, or if the CPU usage remains consistently high for extended periods, it may indicate a deeper problem. High CPU usage can significantly slow down your computer, making routine activities feel frustratingly sluggish. Over time, this excessive strain on your system can lead to increased wear and tear, and in some cases even cause Windows to crash unexpectedly. The root causes of high CPU usage can vary, ranging from rogue background processors and incomplete system updates to malware infections and hardware problems. Fortunately, there are several steps you can take to address high CPU usage, from identifying resource-hungry apps to adjusting system settings. There are effective methods to tackle the issue and keep your Windows computer running smoothly and efficiently. Restarting your Windows computer can resolve temporary issues that might be causing high CPU usage. Doing so will close all apps and services, giving the system a fresh start. Additionally, dust and debris accumulation inside your PC can lead to performance issues and elevated CPU usage. It's a good idea to clean the components inside of your PC, especially the fans and heat sinks. Also, ensure your PC is well ventilated and not positioned in a way that would cause overheating. Another possibility is setting your Windows PC to a balanced or low power mode so as to restrict its ability to use a CPU at its maximum potential. To do this, you set your Windows PC to favor performance over power saving. Open the control panel, head over to the power options, and choose the high performance option. And abnormal CPU usage could also be due to a buggy or outdated Windows build. If that's the case, installing pending system updates should help the problem and bring CPU usage back to normal. Head to the Settings app, select the Windows Update tab, and click the Check for Update button. Wait for Windows to download and install pending updates, and check if the issue is resolved. Sometimes a rogue third-party app or service can cause the CPU usage to shoot up. You can use the Task Manager to identify such problematic apps and services running on your PC and close them. Make sure not to close any essential system processes, as this can cause system instability. If you're not sure about what a service does, right-click on it and select Search Online to learn more. If a specific program is consistently using high CPU, consider updating it, restoring it, or checking for any issues within the app itself. The presence of malware is yet another reason why CPU usage might increase from time to time. These malicious programs often run in the background and consume significant processing power, leading to higher than usual CPU usage. Identifying such programs and services using Task Manager can be difficult, as they might sometimes show up with familiar names. To address this, it's best to run a full malware scan using the built-in Windows Security app. It's important to note that certain third-party antivirus programs can also cause high CPU usage. These programs might run constant background scans, putting a strain on your PC. If you suspect this is the case, try disabling your third-party antivirus program temporarily. Since Windows Security is already enabled on your PC, it will still have protection while the third-party antivirus is off. If your Windows PC continues to experience high CPU usage, performing a system restore might help. This option can be particularly useful if the issue began recently. System restore will revert your computer to a previous state, effectively fixing any recent problems causing the high CPU usage. Wait for Windows to restore itself to its previous state and check if that solves the problem. If it does not, your last option is to reset your computer. Once Windows resets everything, your PC should be as good as new, and you won't encounter any performance issues such as high CPU usage. How to spot when your hard drive will fail before it does. The hard drive installed in your Windows or Mac OS system is where all of your apps and files reside. So as computer components go, they don't get much more important. You might even have more than one drive installed to cover all storage requirements. The hard drive installed in your Windows or Mac OS system is where all of your apps and files live. So as computer components go, they don't get much more important. You might even have more than one drive installed to cover all storage duties. Whether it's a solid-state drive or an older mechanical hard disk drive, this component won't keep going indefinitely. You may well find it stays working smoothly until it comes time to upgrade your laptop or desktop. But there's no guarantee, and failures can often happen, especially with older hardware. When a hard drive does die, it can stop your entire system from functioning and leave your data inaccessible. So knowing the warning signs ahead of time means you can go ensure full backups and a replacement drive are all set up and ready to go. Spotting the signs of a struggling hard drive is not an exact science, and these symptoms can also be connected to other hardware and software problems. But there are red flags to look for. A significant sluggishness when it comes to loading programs and accessing data is one of them, beyond the general slowing down that tends to happen with computers as they get older. You might also hear one or two troubling sounds, especially when it comes to the hard disk drives that use moving parts. Extended periods of clicking or whirring or something to listen out for. If you spend a lot of time in front of your computer, you've probably grown used to the normal sounds of disk operation, so any variation from that can indicate issues. And if you experience problems accessing files, it could indicate a failing hard drive. Random system crashes can be a sign of failing hard drives as well. If your computer is often hanging or restarting itself, it might be because it's having trouble accessing the data it needs, suggesting the drive could be on the way out, especially if these freezes or crashes are happening when you're opening or saving files. Something else to watch out for are files that are damaged or corrupted in some way. These will produce error messages in whatever software program you're using to open them, or you might find files can't even be seen by the system when you're attempting to open them. Again, it's not certain that a failing hard drive is to blame, but it's certainly a distinct possibility. There are a few different ways to check hard drive health in Windows and Mac OS, using both built-in tools and third-party software. For example, load up Task Manager in Windows or Active Monitor in Mac OS for a quick real-time overview of your system. Both of these utilities have sections for disk activity, which can flag any potential problems. With Windows, there's also the Windows Management Instrumentation Command Line Utility, or WMIC. Open Command Prompt from the Start menu, then type WMIC disk drive get model, status, and then hit Enter. You'll see OK next to the drives that are functioning normally, or PRED fail next to drives that are likely to be on the way out. Over on Mac OS, you can load up Disk Utility via Spotlight or the Utilities folder in Finder. Select any of the drives listed, then click the Info button on the toolbar at the top. This will return a host of information about the storage device and will display a fatal hardware error message if there's a serious problem that can't be fixed. Third-party applications can give you even more details about the health of your hard drive, and there are many to pick from. Two that I've found useful are the comprehensive HWinfo for Windows, which is free for personal use, and the Diligent DriveDX, which costs about $20, which gives you a 14-day free trial so you can see if you find it useful before spending any money. First of all, you need to make sure your important files are constantly backed up. This is, of course, something you should be doing anyway, whether or not you think your hard drive is about to break. And there are lots of options available to you, including cloud storage services. If the failing hard drive is the main one that Windows or Mac OS is running from, then you're not going to be able to boot up again once it dies. If the failing hard drive is a secondary one that only holds files, then that's a little easier to replace, and you'll still be able to get into the operating system. Either way, unless you're certain you know what you're doing with hard drive cloning and replacing, it's the best to call the professionals. If you're on a Mac, for example, you can find some support options here, but you can also look up repair services in your local area. You might also be able to get help from the retailer you bought the computer from, or direct from the manufacturer. Whether or not the drive can be successfully repaired depends on a whole range of factors, including what type of drive it is and whether you're dealing with a laptop or desktop. Ultimately, you may have to think about upgrading to a whole new computer. If you got the budget for one, and you can then move your apps and your files across from wherever you've been backed up to. Presenting Technology Chatter with Benjamin Rockwell and Marty Winston.
Marty Winston joins me now, and Marty and I are both both audiophiles. We're both also very fascinated with the entire end-to-end process of the technology that's involved with recording, with production, with PA systems, with broadcast, with all of this. And so he's always looking for the next great microphone. You're like a guitar guy. You know, the guitar guys that have like 20 different guitars, they only play two of them, but they've got the other 18 for whatever reason.
Well, it's important to sound right when you get on a microphone.
So you have a new microphone here, actually.
I saw this at a trade show twice, the AP and Infocom. Yeah. And for 50 years, I had a good relationship with Audio Technica. Every time I asked for a mic, they sent the mic. They never asked for it back. I've used some of them for a long time, as you know.
Yeah.
Some of them are just really remarkable. But when I saw this one, it was a dynamic mic. We'll explain that.
We're gonna spread this out over the next 4 weeks. A lot of different discussion in regards to microphones. So
Well, this dynamic mic has a big diaphragm, the part that moves like a drum head, kind of the size you only see in a good condenser mic. Condenser mics are about detail. Mm-hmm. We'll get into those things later, but let's start at 50,000 feet. When it comes to, and by the way, I'm on the mic now. It is an Audio Technica BP40, blood pressure 40, BP40.
Yeah, that's close to dead at that point. 40 over what? Never mind. Go on.
Officially, it's a BP40 large diaphragm dynamic vocal microphone. Don't write it down.
Okay.
You got a month to pick it up here. When it comes to microphones, they're bad mics, they're good mics, they're great mics. There are also mics that are bad, good, or great when it comes to specific applications for them.
Sure, yes.
You know, for example, talking and singing, both are in the domain of what are called vocal microphones, but they have very different requirements than, well, for example, mics for instrumental recording.
Yes. Oh, very much so. So I've been mixing sound since I was 13 years old at churches, and I would always, okay, what are we miking?
Wait a minute. You were mixing sound at a fried chicken place?
No. Places of worship. So I realized over the years, actually quite quickly on, that each different microphone is going to have its own character, its own wonderful spot for usage.
Yeah, it's a personality.
Yeah.
You know, even within vocal mics, for example.
Sure, yeah.
Country western and opera have different requirements.
Definitely.
You know, even for just talking on the air on radio, AM and FM have different requirements. So I got in this Audio Technica BP40 microphone. The first time I had to ask more than twice.
Yeah.
And also the first time they've wanted it back.
But interesting.
Yeah, as you'll find out in a few weeks, I'm going to be happy to send this back. Meanwhile, you're listening to it. This is the mic we're using for these segments. That's a match, not for me. Your choice may be different, but we'll get into that. When we're all done, we'll give you a B+ in microphones because you'll understand a lot more about them than any of the other people you have arguments with on the weekend. Now, this BP40 is extremely good at one or two specific application environments. So maybe or maybe not, you know, for what you want to do. We can't get around to explaining everything in just one segment, so we'll carve this all into digestible chunks. Mm-hmm. Like that breakfast you had last weekend. I mean, take the knife. Well, the first time I saw this mic, I wanted to get it in and try it. You know why? Because it was bigger around than any dynamic mic I'd seen in a very long time.
Okay, yeah.
It's fully salami slot size. Now, being a dynamic mic, but shaped like a condenser mic, and with a size that usually goes with bigger condenser mics with better to best audio sensing element, it was puzzling. I wanted to know how they made it work and how well they made it work.
Okay. Is that what the screwdrivers are for over there?
Seven of them. every microphone is something solid with something flexible inside. And they call the BP40 a broadcast microphone for some broadcast applications. Sure, okay, but not for all of them, and I'll get into that later. It's a dynamic microphone. Does that mean that it's out to overshadow you? No. Mini drum head connects to a coil that surrounds a magnet. Sounds move that flexible front, which moves the coil through the magnetic field, which creates electricity. In this case, the electricity is a signal that electronically depicts the audio sound.
Mm-hmm.
and it's sound that moved the diaphragm in the first place, and that comes out as a signal. That's how any dynamic mic works. It's how a lot of condenser mics work, more or less.
Yeah.
I'm a longtime fan of condensers because they're very good at capturing subtleties and nuances that the voice can carry. Recently, though, I've come to favor dynamic microphones for here because I'm in an untreated space, not soundproof.
Yes, yes.
And dynamics can reject little background noises like ventilation fans or computer fans or water running through the pipes. But this one, the BP40, it's new and different. It's a different kind of choice, and we'll get into that next time.
As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Marty Winston. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin, and thank you, Marty. Public service announcements. Computer Club meetings in the New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut tri-state region. Log on to the club website for more information on remote meeting ID. The New York Amateur Computer Club has a presentation on note-taking apps. Thursday, September the 12th, 2024. Meeting time is 7 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Zoom. Website is nyacc.org. The Long Island Macintosh Users Group meets Friday, September the 13th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Zoom. And the website is limac.org. The Brookdale Computer Users Group meets Thursday, September the 26th. Meeting time is 6:45 p.m. Online virtual meeting. And the website is bcug.com. TED Ed Connect has a presentation looking at Westchester Geographic Information Systems where maps meet databases. Tuesday, October the 1st, 2024, meeting time is 7 p.m. In-person general meetings are back. Scarsdale Public Library, 54 Olmsted Road in Scarsdale, zip code 10583. Online virtual meeting via Zoom, wpcug.org. The Amateur Computer Group of New Jersey meets Friday, October the 4th. 2024. Meeting time is 8 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Jitsi. Website is acgnj.org. The King's Bite Computer Club meets Tuesday, October the 8th, 2024. Meeting time is 7 p.m. at the Park Plaza Restaurant located at 220 Cadman Plaza West in Brooklyn. For more information, the phone number is 347-278-7320. Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on PRN, live streaming on the Internet. Podcast of the program is available on prn.live on the Internet. If you have any questions for us, just send us an email addressed to Hank at pcradioshow.org. In the meantime, stay in touch and remember to do regular backups. I'm Hank Key, and on behalf of Michael Horowitz, Benjamin Rockwell, and Marty Winston, we thank you for listening. Stay safe and healthy until we meet again, same time, same station next week.